Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone, hitting the links with you on a Saturday morning. This is Talking Golf with Virgil Herring on 104.5 The Zone.
Good morning. Time to talk a little golf, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring on 104.5 The Zone. Got a great show lined up for us today on our Players' Championship event. Doug Barron will be joining us. He'll give us a little inside scoop on what it's like to play in the Players' Championship during March, as he's had multiple experiences playing in the Players' Championship. Nuge is going to join us at the 15 to write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning. But to start our show off right, and we're taking it to the Orca driving range early, is newly coined 2019 Golf Magazine Top 100 Teacher, one of the best guys in the business, Andrew Rice. Andrew, how are you today, buddy?
Virgil, I'm all the better for hearing that. Thanks so much. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and honored to have you on. You know, as we watch the Players' Championship, and it's the first time they've played it in March in about 12 years, it's a slightly different setup as it pertains to the rough that they're playing out of and, you know, how hard and fast the golf course can play. When you think about playing iron shots out of wet turf, it's a very, right now in the Southeast, we got dormant grass for most of the area, so that it's kind of spongy, and it's really important to be able to strike the ball first in this scenario. What are some of the keys that you like to employ for ball striking off the dormant, soggy grass?
Virgil, you know, I think I know they're going to have some overseas down there. Certainly, they're going to make it look green. They're going to make it look good. And, you know, the big thing that I see that golfers tend to not really grasp is even off of tight fairways, I see it on TrackMan all the time, golfers hit flyers. And, you know, you've got that little bit of moisture on the ground, and some of that moisture can get between the face and the golf ball, and golfers will flush a shot, and they'll be posing and looking at it going, fantastic, and this thing lands in the back bunker, and it's a little mystical, and the caddy gets the blame some of the time, but it's a little mini flyer, and the ball will launch higher, it'll have lower spin numbers, and as a result, it'll carry anywhere from 5 to 12 yards longer, but that's the big thing that I would look for, is those little secret flyers that sneak up on you. And really, there's nothing you can do about them. You strike the ball beautifully. You strike it out the middle of the face. You get ball first. But sometimes that can happen through really no fault of your own.
Yeah, no question about it. And when you sprinkle in the March winds, which blow a little bit firmer and out of a different direction than they do in May in Jacksonville, you know, now you're factoring in not only the possible flyer, but you're also, and actually even come out of the fairways, like you said, but now you're factoring in crosswinds at 15, gusting to 22 like they were today. Most people don't understand how to play wind when it comes to how much the wind affects us. I know that you've done a tremendous amount of research on wind and how it affects the ball. Talk to my listeners about how the wind affects the ball positively and negatively, and in the crosswinds.
Okay. Virgil, I would say this. You know, I've looked at it three ways. How the wind affects the ball, I think we need to understand that better. But how the wind affects the athlete, the person, and how the person adjusts almost subconsciously to the effects of the wind. And thirdly, how the wind will cause the player to move differently in response to the wind. And, you know, my general rule of thumb, and I see this all the time, even from good players, golfers will typically underestimate the effect of a headwind and overestimate the effect of a tailwind.
Interesting.
Okay.
So, what would you say is the obviously they're both mistakes, but don't you believe that the into the wind gets rudely mistaken more so than downwind?
Definitely. I'm yet to see a player, a regular weekend golfer like your listeners, most of them, hit an into the wind shot beyond the pin. Just because we underestimate the effect, you know. Typically, I had somebody the other day, and I've got a little wind meter that I use, and I had a really good college player out, and we were hitting into a 14-mile-an-hour wind, and with his 160-yard club, 14 miles an hour, which is not a lot, affected the ball almost 30 yards, 29 yards.
Wow.
Full shot into the wind. And that's not going to be true for every golfer, and there really is no formula. I've searched high and low for a formula, but because we all hit the ball differently with different spin rates and different launch angles, that's going to affect our shots differently. But typically, it's about 2.5 units of hurt into the wind and 1 unit of help downwind. So ultimately, what that means is there's no such thing as a one-club wind. There's no wind that's going to hurt you one club into it and help you one club down, no matter how you hit the golf ball.
That's interesting. I remember in 2003, I spent some time with Tom Watson, and I was getting ready to go play in a pro-am in Ireland. And he said, he told me to take one more club than you think you need until you prove yourself right. And what he meant by that is that I actually hit it over the green. And And I actually never hit one over the green, but I hit more greens in regulation in 30-plus mile-per-hour winds in 5 straight days than I did when there was no wind. And I've started to employ that method in so many ways. But just like you said, I mean, if I was 160 and I would be my 8-iron and it was 30, I was thinking, well, it's a 5, but I'm going to hit 4 because Tom Watson told me to until I prove myself right. And by golly, it just worked all the time. And what's your take on adjusting for the wind? Do you like to take more club and just make your regular swing, or do you like doing some subtle adjustments to keep the ball flat and spin down?
I like to take ample club and just gear down a little bit. But the thing we've got to be careful of, and I know I'm guilty of this, is, you know, we go, okay, well, Tom Watson told me to take, you know, one extra, so I'm going to take the 4, and now we end up just chipping the 4, and we end up coming up short anyway. I think you've got to go, okay, I've taken this extra club, I've still got to commit to it, a little narrower stance, ball maybe slightly further back than normal, but, you know, still commit to the velocity, the power that you normally input into the shot. Be careful of taking all this extra club and gearing down too much. I see that more often than people taking all this extra club and firing it over the green.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. I want to get your take on the great play of Francesco Molinari. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about Rory and Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods, but I'm starting to think that maybe the most underrated great player in the game right now is Francesco Molinari, as he keeps winning huge events, and I would almost expect him to make a run this weekend. When you watch Francesco Molinari, he's spending a lot of time on the range doing things that increase power, you know, kind of increasing his squat, launching his legs, coming through the golf ball. What is it that you see in Francesco Molinari's golf swing that you love, and what is it that you think you could pass on to the listeners out there about what he's working on?
Bridget, you know, I love to kind of compare. I was talking to somebody about this today. I love to compare and contrast the two Molinari brothers, because a couple of years ago, they played together on the Ryder Cup team. And, you know, it seems as if since then, Francesco has just kept trying to get slightly better at all the things that he does well. And his brother has, and I love Eduardo, his brother has taken a different direction. His brother has sought out the latest and greatest coaches in the world. And Francesco is just stuck with Dennis Pugh, and he's just stuck with his trainers, and he's just stuck with what he's done well, and try to get a little bit better at him. He hasn't tried to change who he is as a golfer. And I love that about him. It's been the slow and steady and persistent, patient route towards getting better. And I think more and more golfers need to take a look at that. You know, I look at some of the best players in the game today. They've stuck with their coach. They've they've found a good coach early on, and they've just stuck with that person, and they've said, this person knows my game. This person is going to help me as long as I'm patient, as long as I keep striving to get that little 1% better, they're going to start to get there. But I do love, I loved in the Bay Hill broadcast on Sunday how they showed Francesco's lead heel coming off the ground. I think that's fantastic for golfers to see. It's going to free up their body. It's going to help them generate a little bit more power. It's a good, good thing in my opinion.
Yeah, I love it as well. I love the freedom that he's that allows in his backswing, gets him a little bit more coil, and really just adds just a little extra snap into it, because you know, he does a really good job of replanting into his lead heel before he turns and pushes up off the ground. I think he's really a player to watch in all the majors, and I think he should be considered one of the favorites to win the Players' Championship for sure.
I would say so. You know, you don't need to be a bomber out there. I've looked at a couple of years ago, I did a compare and contrast in one of the rounds between Fred Funk when he was the shortest hitter on tour and Bubba Watson when he was the longest. I think he might still be up there as one of the longest. But, you know, Fred Funk on, I picked 11 of the shortest holes on the course. The course has changed a little bit since then, not dramatically. But Fred Funk averaged 101 yards into those 11 greens, and Bubba Watson averaged 80 yards. So you don't need to be a big bomber out there. And I think the golf course suits Francesco as long as he hasn't, and he doesn't strike me as this kind of player, as someone who's poured everything into his victory at Bay Hill, and he's going to be a little flat this week. He certainly could have success. I know Fred Funk happened to win the Players' Championship on this golf course on a cold and windy period. I believe it was in March. I really do think it was in March. And he's that kind of a player. You know, he's that kind of a player, straight and predictable.
No doubt about it. You're listening to 2019 Golf Magazine Top 100 Teacher of the Year, Andrew Rice. One more question for you, buddy. Rory McIlroy has finished in the top six in every event that he's played this year, but hasn't won any, and he hasn't really done a good job of closing out his Sunday final rounds. If you were his coach, and many people struggle with, you know, winning their club championship or junior golf tournaments, yeah, and they play well, and they lose sight of the fact that they're playing well just because they didn't win doesn't mean they lost. If you were talking to Rory right now, what would you be saying to him as he gets ready for the Players and then the Masters is 4 weeks from now?
Rory, stay patient. One round can not only change your year, but it can change your career. You go out and you fire out a little 67 and come from three back on Sunday at Augusta. All of a sudden, you've won all four majors. Stay patient. You're doing good things. You're going to hold some putts eventually. Let's just stay patient. Keep believing. Keep doing what you're doing. And let's try to get a little sharper on the greens. Let's perhaps change our approach. Let's change how we're practicing putting-wise. But don't change a thing. You're doing fabulously well. Keep it up.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time to join me here on a Saturday morning. Look forward to catching up with you really soon. Keep up the great work, man.
Thanks, Virgil. Looking forward to you know, seeing who can come out as the champion for this Players. It's going to be great. And then we've got Augusta, and looking forward to the rest of the year. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, buddy. Look forward to having you on again soon. All right, when we return, Jim Nugent is going to join us. We're going to write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning, so stick around. You're listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. If you'd like to get involved with the show, hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Virgil Torspin. At this time, every Saturday morning, we write Monday's headlines on Saturday morning with the founder of Global Golf Post, Jim Nugent. Nuge, how are you today, buddy?
Virgil, thank you very much for having me on. I'm doing great.
Well, it's Players' Championship week, very exciting time. And we're coming off of a great tournament at Bay Hill. But this is the first time we've played the Players' Championship in March in about 12 years. And it's a very different golf course in March than in May. You were there this week. Tell us what you saw, and what do you think the Players are going to be contending with this weekend as they prepare to bring home their Players' Championship?
Well, there's a couple of fundamental differences. First of all, very, very few people. I heard a number 12. I don't know if that's verifiable or not, but only 12 players in the field this week had ever played the Players' Championship when it was in March. And so for the vast majority of the field, this is a new golf course because in Jacksonville, Florida, in Ponte Vedra, the way this golf course plays in March with a prevailing northeast wind on new grass that's results in a much softer golf course, it's very different than what we've seen for the last decade or more from the golf course in May when you're dealing with south-southwest prevailing winds and a golf course that plays really firm and fast. And so the conversation in Ponte Vedra early in the week among the players was having to relearn a golf course whose routing hadn't changed too much and the pin positions hadn't changed too much. Tiger said that, you know, last year he came into 18 with a hybrid and an 8-iron or a 9-iron. And today, or earlier in the week, he, in a practice round, it was 3-wood, 5-iron. That's a big change on just one hole on 18. And so I think the whole field has had to learn to play a golf course that really, for most of them, is the first time they've ever seen it.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be a very interesting test this weekend, mainly if the wind begins to pick up. It's a different wind. It's a colder wind. And it's a very different golf course. I was really surprised when I was listening to the press conferences earlier in the week about the difference in how far the ball flies and what clubs they were having in, like you said. But it's a golf course that never really allows the big hitter to dominate. It really goes to who positions their golf ball. And this golf course really never gives you a champion that didn't play best at every part of the game. That's what makes this tournament so special, in my opinion, is that it always produces the best champion that week.
I don't think there's any question because you have to be on hitting on all cylinders on this golf course. You have to drive the ball well. You have to position the ball well on the green. You have to make putts. And when you miss greens, you've got to be able to get up and down and do it proficiently. So all, you know, it's one of those golf courses, and there's not a lot of them on the PGA Tour these days, where all 14 clubs are challenged. But most importantly, the 15th club, the one between your ears, is really challenged. And so it's been said several times during the course of the week that Pete Dye built this golf course to be played in March, not in May. And I think that that's what we're saying, what we're seeing on television. It was fun to watch it when the ball was rolling out and, you know, the golf course played a lot shorter. But what we're seeing now is a golf course playing the way it was intended to be played by the designer. And it's very, very different than it has been for the last 10 or 12 or 15, however many years it's been played in May.
Nuge, don't you think it would be a great honor to the Dye family? You know, Mrs. Dye passed away recently, and Mr. Dye is really struggling with his health, Alzheimer's, and it's a terrible disease. But wouldn't it be just so poignant and so correct for golf that it would showcase the golf course in a condition that the golf course is designed to be played under, and totally show the brilliance of his design work and bring out the best player to win the Players' Championship?
Yeah, it would be a great tribute to the Dye family if you were to see a Rory McIlroy or a great champion win this golf tournament in this particular year, particularly because we're moving it back to March. And, you know, the other commentary that has arisen this week that I think has been very good for our game, very good for golf, is that this new schedule where you start with the Players in March and you've now got a major championship playing in March, April, May, June, and July. And I'm granting the Players major championship status, and I don't know if I should do that or not. But you've got five really big golf tournaments being played in each of these months. Everybody seems to think that it's a really good thing for our game. The players think so. The media thinks so. The administrators think so. And I think the fans, by the time we get around to the Open Championship in July, are going to feel the same way.
It almost lends itself to making it better for the FedEx Cup, which is really good for the PGA Tour because it always gets crushed by the beginning of college football and the NFL season. And this would, I know at the end it does kind of conflict with the first week of college football, but I think it bodes well to put a really nice bow tie on the season for the tour. What's your opinion on that?
You know, taking on the first week of college football is not such a big deal. Taking on the NFL the second week, that's the PGA Tour tried to do that. It tried to do that for the better part of a decade, and it just didn't work. And so I think you're going to find a natural conclusion to our season, to our golf season. And then when the first NFL football is kicked into the air in September and the game is on, I think there's a lot of symmetry to that. And I think just about everybody around the game of golf agrees that it's a good move and arguably a long overdue move.
Yeah, I agree. You know, this past week at Bay Hill, Francesco Molinari, who's like just reappeared in our brain as probably, if it wasn't for Brooks Koepka's heroics, was the player of the year last year. Unbelievable year. Shows up, gets his new clubs, and really puts on an unbelievable performance. I can't begin to take on words how much of an underrated superstar this guy is. And at some point, I'm wondering when he'll get the due respect, but he put on an unbelievable performance at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and I would expect him to be a force to reckon with throughout the rest of this year. When you watched Molinari's performance, what did you take away?
I have to defer to, of all people, Sam Saunders, the grandson of Arnold Palmer. And it was pointed out on so many times on the NBC broadcast, the Golf Channel broadcast as well, nobody in that field has played that golf course as much as Sam Saunders, because he grew up on it. And that's where he learned the game with his grandfather. And he was blown away by the round of golf that was authored by Francesco Molinari. 64 on a golf course that many were likening to major championship conditions. It was long. The greens were firm. That round of golf, at least, you know, year to date, got a long way to go, is the round of the year. And it wouldn't surprise me if you and I are having this conversation when the first football is kicked in the air, if we don't look back on this year and say, boy, that 64 at Bay Hill, that was the round of the year. He deserves all the credit that he won't get because he's not, you know, an American golfer. He's not a prominent golfer. But boy, he's one of the best playing our game right now. And his action, his motion, his swing is so simple and so much to be admired. You just have to take your hats off and say, congratulations, however you say that in Italian.
Yeah, no doubt. The only other storyline out of that week was it's the sixth event in a row in which Rory McIlroy's finished in the top six. And but he has yet to win, and he really hasn't looked good closing on Sundays. Somewhere between, he's got to just keep on putting himself in this position, and it only takes one to break through, and he can go on a massive tear, which he's demonstrated twice in his career. But it's also a sign of, we've been talking about this now for about 2 years. Where do you think it's leaning? Do you think it's leaning towards he's maturing, his mindset's better, and he's about ready to break through, or he's about ready to crack because he just can't take one more Sunday falter?
It's so hard to tell. You know, he was in a press conference this week at Players, and he was open and candid and honest and transparent and talked openly about his hopes and desires and failures. But I have the solution, Virgil, and your listeners are going to be the first to know what that solution is. I'm here to tell you that how we're going to fix this is that Rory is going to play his ball from tee to green, and you are going to putt for him.
That'll get him a tie for 14th. that's beautiful. Nuge, how can my listeners get a hold of the Global Golf Post and the new special GGP Plus?
Your listeners can get a free subscription to our weekly digital news magazine, Global Golf Post, by going to globalgolfpost.com. You can sign up for it. It's free. It's advertiser supported. All we need is your email address. But you can also subscribe to our new subscription service, GGP Plus, for $7 a month. We're going to deliver to you on a daily basis the best golf journalism that there is in the world. I think your listeners would love it.
I know they will, because I do. You've done a great job with that, Nuge. I can't thank you enough for putting that out there, because good journalism had kind of slipped away for a while, and you've packaged it up beautifully, so congratulations to you.
Well, thank you very much. The credit goes to the people who do all the content. I just try and keep the trains running on time.
I love it. Nuge, thank you very much, buddy. Look forward to having you on next week.
Virgil, cheers. Thanks for having me on today.
You're welcome. When we come back, Doug Barron's going to join us, and he's going to give us his own personal feelings about what's going on at the Players' Championship and kind of run us through his memory of what it's like. So stick around. You're listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. Nobody said it was easy. Welcome back, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. It's at this time every Saturday morning we make the turn and decide it's a better idea to go to the range, the Orca Driving Range, where we bring the best players and teachers in the world to help us with our game. And today we have a very special guest, former PGA Tour player and getting ready to be a Champions Tour player. I can feel it, from Memphis, Tennessee, Doug Barron. Doug, how are you today, buddy?
Man, I'm good, Virgil. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing wonderful. Before we start talking about the Players' Championship, big victory last week, Emerald Coast Tour, getting yourself ready for the Champions Tour. We've been kind of having about every 6 months keeping track of you. Where's your game? How you feeling? And what's it feel like to hoist a trophy and a check?
Well, my game's really good. I haven't played a ton. You know, the weather's been bad in Memphis as well. I've been down here in Florida for like 3 out of 4 weeks. But I was at Trump National early in the year working on my game and got to play with a bunch of Champions Tour guys like Glenn Day and Yes Ren, those guys. And that was fun. And then just been playing some on our buddy Gino's tour, the Emerald Coast Tour. And got me a victory this week at Kiva Dunes, which is one of the toughest courses in Alabama. I love it. And it wasn't that I won, but I shot the scores that I thought would compete well when I get ready to turn 50. So that was kind of cool. So
yeah, that's awesome. When you think back to how far you've come in the last 2.5 years, when what are the key factors for you in taking your game to this level that you really feel like you've made the huge improvements and strides that you wanted to make?
Well, one, you know, obviously just playing competitively again. I basically have quit teaching. That's so hard to teach and play competitively at the same time. So the playing, I've played 9 events last year and I've already played 3 this year, and just starting to get comfortable, like we talk about getting nervous again. I mean, you know, you can't test your game unless you're playing in tournament golf. I'm convinced of that. I tried to think I could, but man, I'm still not quite there, but I'm starting to shoot scores consistently and starting to get comfortable with it. So,
I love it. Well, you know, you've played in the Players' Championship and all of them in March, and it's kind of a new topic because it's been played in May for a while. When you think back to the golf course then, and obviously it plays with a little bit more wind, a different wind direction, and it's a little bit lusher, a little bit softer. Step us through some of the holes, the critical holes on the front nine and the back nine that we'll be watching this weekend that the best players in the world are going to have to tackle with strategy and precision.
Yeah, so it's cool. So the thing about playing in March, you can get a south wind or you can get a north wind, whereas when they were playing in May, they were just basically getting the wind out of the south. And the holes to me that are crazy, you know, take number one. When it's out of the north, it's a left to right and kind of into your face wind. And that little hole with that green was always a tough starting hole. And then you go around, and then both par threes play really tough. Think of number 8 played it into a left to right wind and a little bit in when the wind came out of the north. I thought 8 was always a really, 7 and 8 were always a difficult hole. And then you never saw people reach number 9 because if it's the north wind, it was straight into the wind. So, the front nine to me was extremely difficult when I was out there on tour. I played in 5 Players' Championships, and I always thought the front nine was much harder than the back. And then the back nine, you actually had some holes that I thought made it easier. Holes like 14, when the wind blew out of the north, you kind of had a right to left helping wind, which that hole is always difficult in May. That's one of the tougher holes. I think you won't see that one play as tough. And then you get 16, actually get downwind when the wind's out of the north. But 18 and 17 and 18 are just unbelievably hard when you get those north winds. So I hope they get to experience that this week. And, you know, you can look back and of all the Players' Championships and all the, I think 15 of the toughest years were all the ones in the March. So I'm looking forward to seeing what these younger players do. I'm sure they'll do really well, but it is way tougher. You'll see much higher scores, in my opinion.
Well, I'm most fascinated by the fact that because it plays shorter, that probably brings driver into play a couple more times. It's not a golf course that necessarily lends itself to the bomber, although, you know, it also has lended itself that the best player at the time has won a majority of the events there. But it's interesting because when you get a chance to tax these guys with their long irons, it's one of the very few golf courses the long irons get hit frequently.
Yeah. And I think that's a tribute to Pete Dye. You look at Harbortown. I mean, Harbortown, the same score still in, same thing at the Players. You just have to place your ball off the tee. And it's kind of like, you know, last week on the tour, it played so hard off the tee, and the best ball strikers end up winning. And they couldn't have picked, the top two, Francisco Molinari and Rory McIlroy. But when the course is set up, like when Pete Dye gets it the way he wants it, you know, he does such a good job of bringing out the best ball strikers, in my opinion. I've always been a huge Pete Dye fan. I hope your audience is, because I think he's amazing. Every course I've ever played has just been amazing that he does.
So. Yeah, like when I think back to the my favorite ones, obviously this one is great, and Hilton Head is great. And I played the opportunity to play Teeth of the Dog in the Dominican Republic, which is just phenomenal. My goodness. And Oak Tree in Oklahoma. Did you play there in the PGA Championship?
No, but I played a Southern Amateur there back in the day when I was young, and it was awesome. And then just all the guys, you know, Willie Wood, who was my big brother on tour, they all grew up playing there, so it was cool to hear all their stories from there all the time. It was awesome.
He has a nice way of making you feel incompetent when you're just not clicking.
Oh, man. I mean, when you're playing good, I've had really good rounds with the Players, but man, some of the days where it's not going good, I mean, around the green, he can just make you feel stupid if you're not hitting your iron solid. So
when you think of the players that have done well there, you know, you got obviously Tiger's won twice and Adam Scott's won, but you know, Rory hasn't won. Jordan Spieth hasn't played well there at all. Bubba Watson's not really have ever been a factor. You know, it's an interesting event because, you know, at the time when David Duval won, he was easily the best player in the world. Tiger's won twice. Henrik Stenson's won. The guy can flat out rip it too.
Right.
Does anybody?
He's one of my picks this week.
Is that right? Because he's starting to turn around. He was really, really struggling, and he's going through caddies like I go through socks. And now, you know, I think he's got Fanny on the bag.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see how this all works out. But Henrik Stenson's got to be a very good dark horse.
I just started thinking about, from last week, you know, good ball strikers. Obviously, you'd have to put Rory and Francisco Molinari back up there. They drive it so good. But I was starting to think of players. I thought of Henrik Stenson just came to mind. He hadn't been doing much. And like you said, he's been going through caddies, but he's one of my favorite players anyways, because he's a really, really nice man. And two, I just love the way he hits that three wood. You need that club around that place. So, and then obviously my obvious pick, Justin Thomas this week. He's doing everything really well. And I think he's just a little mad from Riviera still, so I think he's going to have a little fire in him if he gets in contention. So
yeah, I think that we spend a lot of time talking about Rory and Dustin Johnson, and you know, obviously Tiger and Jordan Spieth, but Justin Thomas always seems to be like the fifth or sixth guy we talk about, but I'm not so sure that he's not the best player.
I think he's the best. I just, every time I watch him putt, it looks like it's going in. I mean, you coach and you've been around it all for a long time, Virgil. His putting stroke to me is just money. So, and he chips the ball. You know, I don't think he gets enough credit for his short game. I think he's one of the best chippers out there, from what I see. So,
yeah, man, he's the total package. There aren't many total packages out there. You know, Rory's a little weak with the putter
and the wedges.
Rory's
not a great wedge. Yeah,
and so. But you know, Brooks Koepka and JT are solid from tee box to putter.
I'm with you. I actually like Justin Thomas's game better than Brooks Koepka. I think I'd take him that week in and week out. I just think I think he has the best mental game out there. Him and, of all the Americans, I say Ricky Fowler and Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas's mental game, he can come back from some of the craziest stuff that you've ever seen. I mean, I see where he makes like a couple weeks ago, he makes like two doubles and he still shoots under par down there at the Honda. I mean, the rest of us would be shooting 80, you know, so. Yeah. He's amazing.
In Riviera, he hit a shank and still made par.
It was unbelievable. On the ninth hole, I saw it. And he did get a little flustered on the back. That's the first time I've seen him ever. But the first time I've seen him kind of unfold ever on the back nine against J.B. Holmes. But that's, you know, I think every player, I think we can even say Nicklaus did that several times. But you just don't see him come undone very often. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, my final question, because you've now named two people that gave me this feeling. It just popped into my head. J.B. Holmes and Henrik Stenson are two of the people that when they hit the golf ball, the ground honestly shakes when they make contact with the golf ball. It is the most unbelievable thing. The first time I felt it, JB was still at University of Kentucky, and I was playing in a pro-am with Brant.
Okay.
And Brant's like, hey, man, you got to come and watch this kid hit it. It's unbelievable. And he's hitting shots, and I'm like, do you feel that in your feet, Sneds? He's like, yep. He hits it longer than anybody. So he walks up to him and says, JB, how far you hit your 5-iron? He goes, as far as you want me to.
Yeah. That's funny you say that, because I'll never forget this, because the week after J.B. Holmes won in Phoenix his rookie year, Rich Beam and I got paired with him at Riviera on Sunday, and he was whining, and like he's out driving me and Rich Beam by 50 yards and just whining about it. I'm like, dude, and Rich and I are looking at each other going, this kid's so good. He just won last week, and he's already acting like a veteran. but I would put someone else into that category, you know, Henrik Stenson, like you said. But, man, I hit balls and played with Fred Couples a bunch, and he did the same thing. He made a sound that, you know, you just didn't hear. Obviously, Tiger did, but I always think of Fred Couples. So the guy was amazing.
You know, Lee Westwood really made the ground shake, too. I've always felt like Tiger was a light hitter because he didn't take big divots. He kind of picked it right off the turf.
Right.
But my goodness, when Retief Goosen had a heavy hit, too, when he was on that Duke. That's the thing about Retief Goosen that always struck me, is I could not believe how big he was in person. That was right. One big boy.
Well, he's the guy never says two words, so you don't know if he's 2 feet from you or a mile away. That's one thing. It's hard to get a word out of that boy. So, anyway, I think he's going to do well on the Champions Tour, speaking of him. So. Yeah,
no doubt about it. Well, Doug, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come on the show, keep us up to speed on your playing, and giving us the inside scoop on the Players Championship. Hope that you're doing well, and I look forward to having you on again really soon, buddy.
Appreciate you, Virgil. Y'all have a good one, man.
Thanks, buddy. All right, so stick around. We're going to finish strong. You're listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. All right, it's time to finish strong, and you are listening to Talking Golf with Virgil Herring here on 104.5 The Zone. An interesting weekend for me last weekend, as I had the opportunity to get my first 18-hole round of golf in, and it kind of sent me back as a player and a coach in a variety of ways. I spent a lot of time in the last 2 years being around the greatest mental coaches and the greatest strategist in the world, Scott Fawcett. I just totally think the world's gone. If you've listened to the show, you know I named him the 2018 MVP for golf, and he's just so enlightening and so powerful with the message that he has on course management. But I had the opportunity to play, and obviously, you know, it's early in the year and it's only one round of golf, but I had the easiest 70 of my life, and there was a variety of things that popped out to me that I think the average player can glean from it as well, not just because I'm a professional and a teacher, but I'm still a person who loves the game. And so I'm a left-hander, so I've met most of my life without playing blades, because in the 80s and the 90s nobody made blades, so I was always wanted to have them. And it wasn't until about 2002, I believe, where Harry Taylor was designing Mizuno irons, they made a left-handed blade. And I swore that I would never not play blades until I was no good anymore. I just wanted to have that feeling. Well, I've been playing blades since that day and love it. And I love the purity of it. But this past year, Callaway Apex Pros came out, and I've been kind of reluctant to go back to the cavity backs because they generally have a little hot spot in them. And when I get going, I all of a sudden start to have really abnormal distances. So I've shied away from it. But the new Apex Pros are just otherworldly incredible. And it's hard for me to get that to come out of my mouth. But when I start to think about how easy that round of golf was, and I didn't really hit it spectacular, it just lets me know how much technology is helping the game and how much it's going to continue to help the game for the average player. The first thing that I noticed is that my ball flew way, way higher in the air, but had much less backspin on it. So the technology that we're starting to see in these irons are like driver technology. They're taking away the spin. Now, what does that mean? That also means that you will not be slicing it or hooking it like you have in the past. So when you get the golf balls that don't spin as much, and then you combat that also with iron technology that's launching the ball noticeably higher with less spin, it's now easier to get the ball in the air. It's easier for the ball to stop, and it doesn't require the precise strike and backspin to make it stop like it did, you know, 10 years ago. I think that's really important for people to understand out there, is that what does that mean? That means that you should strongly consider making sure that your golf clubs are fitted for you and that you're not making the game more difficult for yourself than need be. I feel like, after experiencing that this weekend, that my ego has been making myself play the game more difficult. And it was a really humbling experience to me, because with the knowledge that I've learned to help myself mentally from Stephen Yellen and Dr. Brett McCabe, who are two of the most brilliant men who attack the mental game from the exact opposite sides, they have really helped me, one, put myself in the right place. And if I get out of place, they help me pull myself back in. I think that Stephen Yellen is the greatest person at helping you get into the great performance state. And I believe that Dr. Brett McCabe is the greatest person to put you back in if you find yourself out. Those two gentlemen are unbelievable. But Scott Fawcett's technology and information on course management has totally changed how I look at myself, how I ended up teaching the game, not playing, and how I thought. Many times I was aggressive when I needed to be conservative, and I was conservative when I needed to be aggressive. And with his plan, and you can look him up on the Decade app, you can look him up on playinglesson.com, or he's on social media everywhere. The guy is brilliant, and I'm strongly encouraging everybody out there, if you want to take your game to the next level but not have to change your golf swing, listen to what Scott Fawcett has to say. There's no emotion left when I'm playing. My strategy's set. I don't really think. And it totally allows me to forgive myself when I have an execution error, because it used to be I couldn't quite tell if it was an execution error or if it was a mental error. And now there are no mental errors unless I choose to, at the last second, change my mind on what I'm going to do about halfway down. But one of the D's in Decade, which is just an acronym for six different terms, discipline, the fifth letter, the second D, discipline, is so critical in being a great player. And I've learned that through him. I've learned how to prepare myself mentally. And on this weekend, we celebrate the Players' Championship. I'm also celebrating the people that help make this game great, both the mental coaches, the teachers, and Scott Fawcett. So thank you for making us part of your Saturday, because without you, there is no talking golf. For my favorite producer in the land, Jimmy Hopper, thank you for making us part of your Saturday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.